Hey everybody, this is Shop Talk Show number 264, and as we've been doing lately, we've been kind of deep diving into specific topics. I think you all know there's a big one happening in the world of front-end development, and it has been for years and years, to be fair, but that's this behemoth that is React. So we actually have three guests this week who are all from the engineering team at Netflix to talk to us about all things React, because they use it, and they use it in interesting and different ways and different parts of React, and they just have lots of interesting things to say. The conversation was lots of fun and full of the nuance that we like here on Chop Talk Show. So there's like high level, what is it? What other tools come along for the ride? What is React Fiber? There's what's going on with Dave's Netflix on Xbox and comparing it to other technologies and the performance of it and all that stuff. So it's a great conversation. Stay tuned for it. Dave, please kick things off.
Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and you might say I'm reacting to the excitement. I'm in the flow. I hope the podcast recording doesn't fail and we have to do a redux. I am Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer. Get it? Redo, so, redux?
I think I get it. I think I followed along with your...
I was punning.
I'm just going with the flow.
Flow.
We're gonna have it as we've been
I guess doing. You could say that component did not mount or something, or
yikes.
Will
yikes
yo
hey. That's what Dave does. We're as we have been doing lately and will do again, we're gonna do a deep dive onto a particular technology, and this just one just kind of fell into our lap. And of course it's a hot topic in just coding the world of web development lately, and that is all things React. I heard from Ryan from Netflix. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Fantastic. Who has his own show, Front End Happy Hour, right, that y'all do?
Yes, and actually Jem is a guest on here as well, and he's on Front End Happy Hour too.
And we have Jem. Hey, Jem.
Hello.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining. And a third developer, all three of y'all from Netflix, we have Nofel. Hey, Nofel.
Hi there, Chris.
Hey. So... we have a tribe of Netflix developers. Maybe spend a minute and talk about, well, I don't know, what y'all do at Netflix. What's it like over there?
Yeah, for sure. So I can start. I'm Ryan Burgess. I'm a UI engineering manager at Netflix. I work on a team called the Acquisition UI team. We build all the signup flows for Netflix. So everything that's getting you into actually watching Netflix, that's our team building that. And we use a lot of React. So it kind of made a lot of sense for us to come on and talk about React.
That's interesting. So it's a big, I mean, clear, I think all of us can imagine Netflix a pretty big place. I mean, it's a big company. It's a zillion people. I don't know anybody that doesn't have Netflix, for anecdotally, for example. And so you have a specific team that isn't like watching shows. That's somebody else's team.
We all watch shows too. Like, come on. But yes, no, we're actually building the UI that people are interacting with.
Okay. And all three of you, or are you on different teams?
We are actually all on the same team.
Okay. Awesome. What else?
Yeah. So I work on this team as well as a senior UI engineer. However, I'm focusing more on the payment aspect of it. So if you're thinking of the signup flow, when it gets time to enter your credit card information or pay with PayPal, that's where my area of focus is within that team. Also working in React, flirting a bit with React Native and a bit of TV UI. So I don't know if some of you have heard about this, but our TV UI is actually also in React. So it's cool to work across these different platforms all in React.
Yeah, that is cool. So no strangers to React over there, and that's what we're here to talk about. So this TV stuff, you know, wow, how interesting. You're all probably doing all kinds of interesting stuff with React, server side React and stuff, I'm sure. But before we deep dive, maybe we should shallow dive or something. Like, Like, what was the discussions like at Netflix to reach for React? Is everybody whole hog on the, like, what, why React at all? Do you want to maybe one of you take a stab at explaining like what React is at all at that super shallow level and like what makes that compelling for Netflix?
Yeah, I mean, for like React, they actually adopted it before I was at Netflix. But a big thing around the discussion was using modularity, which React definitely is really good at, but also just performance for manipulating the DOM was really important for it to build a really great user experience. But a big thing that we do at Netflix, kind of speaking to the modularity, is we do a ton of A/B testing. So we're constantly creating features that are being tested within all of our platforms, whether it be TV, website, or mobile. We're testing things and we're trying to understand how it works with our users. And React does a really good job of that, of being able to create components that can be swapped in and out. There are a lot of other frameworks that are great for doing that, but React really just did a lot of the things that we're trying to accomplish. Obviously, a big thing that always gets said is the virtual DOM. And having leveraging something like the virtual DOM to make state changes has really allowed us to create really performant UIs. So at a really high level, that's what it is. Another thing too on the website, when we first started looking at it, we wanted to be able to render our React components on the server, or not just React components, but wanted to render any of our JavaScript on the server and serve them up to the client. And React was able to do that. So we're leveraging Node as like our server and loading React through the server side and then rendering it on the client.
Okay, maybe we can get into that server stuff later in a minute, but maybe those quick, you know, the high level why React stuff is the components thing was big. You build in components, you think in components, so maybe that's why. And then the DOM performance thing, you know, we're making changes to state all over the place, so that matters. Hopefully that's fast and good. And then the A/B testing thing, that's a little wild card. I don't hear that super often with the React conversations, but why not, you know?
There, we have a saying in Netflix, if you talk to someone from Netflix long enough, they'll tell you about A/B testing. Doesn't matter who it is, like every single person.
And I started it right away.
We do love A/B testing.
I struggle with it a little bit. I mean, not to make this about me, but sometimes I'm like, we have a framework for it built in at CodeFedNow, and I always am like, what should I A/B test? No, I give up. I can't think of anything. That's just not the story on Netflix.
Oh, clear. Chris, I could think of a million things for you to test.
You can A/B test literally.
It's not just the what to test. It's like, when do you stop the test? I struggle with that more often, because what are the conditions for ending an A/B test? I know this, we've just ruined the Reactness of this, but I would be interested in the answer to that.
I mean, a quick answer is like, we have data scientists. Does it really help us on that? But what you're looking for is statistical significance of really understanding what's performing better. And at that point, we can say, like, clearly say by data that this is a better performing feature.
But is it because they signed up? Is that the end of the test? Or is it because they clicked? Or is it because they typed a letter? Or is it because they, you know, it's the ending of the test?
That's a great question, in the sense of, like, you should really think through that up front, is your hypothesis of, like, yes, for a lot of things that we're doing on our side on the acquisition UI team, is a lot of it is sign up. But maybe it's, like, getting plays. Maybe it's getting a user to actually click play quicker. There's a lot of metrics that you kind of have to think about what's your core goal at the start. And so if it is getting signups, then yes, if we were able to say moving the signup needle, getting it faster or anything like that, if that's what we're trying to achieve, then you should set that kind of as a goal up front. And then if that metric moves, then clearly you've kind of found a winner at that point.
Just a like quick blurb on A/B testing. If you're thinking, what do I A/B test? Your hypothesis is the most important thing you can do. Because if you don't know what you're testing, you don't know what you're measuring, and you don't know when you're successful or you fail. So that's like the lazy answer to A/B testing on how you do it. Mm-hmm. You need a good hypothesis.
And when you say React is good, or I guess suits your A/B testing model, do you mean kind of from the technical side, like you can just put labels in states and see which like button text, you know, click here or subscribe now or whatever, like performs better, or do you mean like you hot swap components? You're like carousel one versus carousel with arrows buttons two or something. What, I guess, what kind of variants are you? Are you doing like component swapping or kind of like micro texty swaps? And why is React good for that?
So like we should probably zoom out a little bit more because I think we're all making the assumption that everybody knows what React is, which is largely true. But other parts of the world, they use a lot of Angular and PHP and things like that. So at like a 10,000 foot level, UI or React is just a declarative way of building a UI. That's it. There's no networking built in. There's not much for data management. There's all libraries for all these things, but it's just a way to build UI, which is probably one of the reasons why it's so popular, because it's just unopinionated. So that being said, you can encapsulate entire ideas in just a single React file or a component, or break it down into multiple components. And because it's built to be split out that way, it makes it easy to build button A or button B or red page or blue page, things like that. And the whole idea behind components is that you just swap them out easily. So A-B testing, you're swapping things out constantly, trying to optimize for that ideal use case or whatever your hypothesis is. And that's why React is really, really good at that, because it's just, it's built to be componentized, and we're just swapping components for A-B tests.
Yeah, so to answer your question, David, is more that we're swapping more at a component level, not necessarily just changing like props.
Right. So you kind of, I guess you'd encapsulate those props into a component and just swap those, sort of. Okay. Or a group of components, just like a whole page.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
So you mentioned this is, you know, there are libraries for those sorts of things, and React is, you know, there's like kind of a joke, isn't there? I think you'll find React is not a framework or whatever, that it's just this one little piece of things, but it almost never comes by itself, right? And that's one thing that would be worth talking about a little bit. I generally find that it's at least React plus Babel plus Webpack generally, right? And then maybe even more than that. Like what's like the React stew at Netflix?
That's really dependent on every team. So the freedom of responsibility of Netflix extends all the way down to the code level, where if Ryan, he's actually our manager, but if he says, hey, tomorrow we're going to use Angular 2 instead of React, we'd be like, okay. Well, actually, we'd have a healthy discussion about that. But so it's really hard to generalize how everybody else is using React at Netflix, but I can talk specifically about our team. We don't use Webpack for anything, but we do use Babel because, you know, Feature Yes is amazing and everybody should be writing it. Feature ECMAScript. So, that's a different topic entirely. But we do use Babel pretty extensively throughout our code. We use Lodash if we need kind of utility libraries. And we use a little bit of everything. And we're still, even now, we're still experimenting on what exactly is the React stack that we want to use. But at its core, it's always been Lodash, React, and Babel.
I'm interested in, like, do you use the router? Do you use Redux? Or are those both also nodes?
We use a bit of React router, but not extensively in general, at least on our team. I know other teams make much higher use of that. But on our team, we keep it pretty simple. We do really, really basic routing. We just started implementing a project, which was actually a pretty large project, using Redux. But before that, we used, Fluxor. Actually, one of the engineers here at Netflix wrote Fluxor, so that's probably why we used it. But now we're leaning a bit more to Redux. But that's still an open debate. I don't believe in kind of following the crowd most of the time, unless you can justify it. And I think that's good. We always have healthy debates about where we're going to go next.
Yeah, it sounds like a healthy place to work. So another part of this React conversation is not just what you do, but like zooming out again for the rest of the world and the rest of the devs and the people listening to this show who are working on their own projects. Maybe they're beginners, maybe they're intermediate people. What's that moment like for them? Should they be, I mean, I guess if they're gunning for a job at Netflix, it probably wouldn't hurt to know React, or is that dangerous to tell people, or would you prefer people that know JavaScript? Like, what do we tell people learning this stuff?
That's always a good question. Like, I feel like I always get that, and we don't necessarily need someone who writes React or that has a ton of experience writing React, JavaScript fundamentals are really important. I do a lot of hiring at Netflix, and that is a big thing, is we would hire someone who knows the fundamentals of JavaScript, who has some experience writing in different frameworks, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like, oh, I've been writing React for 2 years and, you know, I want to work there. It's like, no, do you understand the fundamentals of JavaScript? I mean, like Jem said, we could totally switch and start using something else down the line because it makes more sense for our team. So, but at the end of the day, we're writing JavaScript and that's, you know, the fundamentals are there.
Yeah. Dave, Chris, tell all your listeners, everybody listening really, really closely, if you're just learning web development, do not learn a specific framework. Learn JavaScript, because it will change in the future and you'll be much better for it if you just learn JavaScript and not any one specific framework.
And I think you're mentioning that in terms of like your own knowledge and your own like usefulness in JavaScript land. But it was just said that it's easier to get a job too.
Yeah, totally. Like that's more important. It
helps you in all ways.
And what do we do tomorrow if we say, new hotness.js is the new hotness and we all want to switch to that? Well, crap, we have this team of, I don't know, 30 people that they only know React and are just, you know, they're wringing their hands thinking, what are we going to do? But no, we have a team of people who know JavaScript. Well, and so we can easily switch to whatever we want. And
is it easily? Not to call you out or anything. I'm just curious. Like what if, you know, there's Angular's, it's long been like Angular versus React, although I don't know what that conversation is like anymore. Ember gets invited to the party a lot. Vue's super big.
Yep.
Now Svelte's getting cool. I've heard about Viper HTML that's super fast and winning some competitions and stuff. Inferno usually makes the list. Then there's like things like Preact, which is like the same, like a really tiny version of React that's been compelling a lot of people because maybe switching to that, it has some similar APIs, so it's not so hard. That's a lot. That's a list that's not comprehensive, but it's like, what if, you know, what if Ryan walked into the world and said, we're switching to one of these things. What would that conversion be like? Do you feel like the buy-in for React is like high?
It's fairly high. There would be a lot of technical debt switching over, but in general, we'd have a good discussion of the pros and cons. And we say, oh, well, new hotness JS is, it's going to make us 10x faster. And here's the cost, but it's only a 5x cost. Then we switch. But if we're just like, well, this is a new cool thing, but the cost of switching is going to be so high, then we generally don't do it. And of course, we can arrogantly say that at a big company where we have to analyze the cost of things. But if you're at a startup, it's easier to switch things, which actually I think makes it more difficult because you get JavaScript fatigue. She's like, oh, I'm using Reflux. Oh, crap, man. You know, Redux is so much better. And you're like, oh, man, I should switch. But at a bigger company, you kind of weigh the costs much more than just I want to use the newest library and look cool on Twitter. We generally tend not to do that. But you're right. You can't just arbitrarily switch frameworks. I doubt anybody can. But it's something that we weigh the pros and cons of if something new were to come out that was better.
Sure. I mean, it seems like even if you could prove that Svelte was, objectively better, and it might be, it would still feel like a weird choice for Netflix.
Yeah, it would be like, we'd have to have a big discussion about like, how do we approach that? Because you can imagine, you know, like Jem said, there's a lot of like tech debt there to switch to a new framework. And it's not something that we'd want to invest in just switching every year to the new hot new framework. It's, you really have to think that through. And is it beneficial? Is it going to make our lives easier? Is it something that we can invest in for a couple of years? It's not something that's just short term. Like you just mentioned a bunch of new frameworks or libraries that came out fairly recent. So if we literally switched every month, like we would never get anything done.
And right now, because React is slowly just becoming more and more ubiquitous across the front-end community, Nofel and Ryan are actually great to talk about React Native, because that's a debate we're having right now internally, is do we start building some apps in React Native? What's the cost of that versus native versus just building a WebView wrapper? And Nofel, I'd love to hear more about React Native and just what are the costs of that? Because I know that's one of the hotter things going on right now in React.
I could say that zooming out on that for a second, that doesn't that feel bizarre? Like I write, even though React is weird and maybe I'm writing in JSX but there's still like click handlers and divs and inputs and things. And that like, could we explain what React Native is? Like what if I'm not, if none of those things exist, if there's no CSS, if there's no divs, what am I writing? What is React Native?
React Native is essentially React, but instead of targeting the DOM or the browser elements, it's targeting native code. So like an actual native button or a native list, the exact same components that you would see inside of an app written in Objective-C. And so it's essentially providing you the same declarative API to manipulate these native modules. And so essentially you can kind of pull React out of the web into its own library that enables you to write JSX. And then on the web, you have it paired with React DOM, which is actually a separate library controlling the DOM elements. And then React Native is the equivalent library, but controlling your native modules on Objective-C, so iOS and Android.
Is it one code base then, or is it kind of like it's a split code base, but there's some shared code base?
Yeah, so it's split into a React package, and then you have two separate packages. You have React DOM, which is what you would use to build a website, and you have React Native, which is what you would use to build.
So maybe some of your like business logic stuff can hang out in this shared place, but the kind of the UI stuff is split.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one way that you could set up your code. So if you're writing an app that's going to be cross-platform, used on the web, iOS, and Android, you can have your business logic. So anything related to like our signup flow and our state machines would be kind of split out from our view logic or our view components. And then you could have components that you could swap in and out on different platforms while sharing that business logic across your different code bases.
Have you lived it? Is it working? Does it work?
We're not fully committed to React Native right now. We're still experimenting with it. But in an ideal world, that's what we'd want to do. We've recently ran a test on a new sort of signup flow, and it's structured in a way that we could easily share that business logic in the event that we would fully adopt React Native in the future. Another cool thing happening right now is React Native Web. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but Twitter is actually using the React Native components on the web, and they're just translating them to React DOM elements. And so they actually have a shared code base between their mobile web and React Native.
So they're iOS and Android native apps?
So I'm not sure that their apps are exactly React Native, but they're using the components that you'd use on React Native. So if I take a step back, on the web, we know them as like divs and spans and inputs. On React Native, they're actually, div is swapped out for a component called view, and a span is swapped out for a component called text, and then input is input. And so they've actually used the components from React Native, and they convert those to divs and spans on the web. And what that lets them do is share components across React and React Native. And Airbnb's done a lot of work around that too.
So when they code like a tweet object, they only code it once and it can translate to web and native. They don't have to kind of...
And this is a different code because there's twitter.com and then there's mobile.twitter.com, and mobile.twitter.com is the one that's React Native-ish.
That's right.
And then we're not totally sure if their actual iOS app actually uses this or not, but maybe it does.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know for a fact that Airbnb does this. So they use something called React Native, React Primitives, which is like React Native Web. It's the equivalent of what I just mentioned over at Twitter. And they actually share components across web, iOS, and Android. So they'll code up, you know, a call to action button, and they'll share it across platforms.
So they're living the dream.
they're living the dream. Yeah, they've gone further and actually share those components within Sketch. So they have their designers using the exact same components that they're running on the web and on their native applications.
This is a neat different paradigm because it's not I'm coding a website. It's like I'm coding this stuff that will that goes through some kind of compilation and then is it the website is just a target now, just like iOS would be a target of my compiler. I'm just writing JavaScript and I'm spitting out multiple platforms.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, yeah, wow, it's so weird. Including TV, y'all were saying, right? So what's that world like?
Yeah, so I think in order to really understand all this, we should probably talk about React renderers and what they are. And so React renderers are basically what you guys are just mentioning, like the targets. You can have different targets, so the web, Android, iOS, recently VR. Basically, in React, you're writing components, and then when you take that component and you pass it on to your renderer will transform that into whatever the target requires. So on the web, we're targeting the DOM. On Objective-C, we're targeting native code. And so for us on TV, we have our own framework, and so we have a custom renderer that will take our components and translate them to what we need to render onto that platform.
So not to get like super, super technical, because I hate throwing out like computer science buzzwords, but it's essentially declarative programming versus imperative. And declarative is you say, hey, I want to do this thing, but you don't tell explicitly how to do it. You just say, here's what I want to do. And then React figures out what you want. That would be declarative. HTML, on the other hand, is imperative because it's saying you're saying exactly the structure you want, exactly how you want it to come out, exactly how things should operate. And that's imperative programming. So the benefit of declarative programming in this instance is you can target multiple things. So you can write one time and React's like, oh, you're writing for the web? Cool, I'll spit this out. Oh, you're writing for iOS? Cool, I'll spit out some Objective-C. You're writing for Android? I'll spit out Java, et cetera, et cetera.
It's more abstraction.
Exactly.
What's the output, though? I think everyone, you know, we have a snooty guy, the web standards southern gentleman, Colonel WB Standards, comes by, and he judges everyone's markup. Like, when I'm using these web target compilers, what, you know, is it decent markup? Or does it have a document outline? Is it accessible? How do I know that? Or do most people just not care? And that's why the web's in such an awful state.
Ooh, that's a good question. I like that question too. I think for me, a lot of it is you're still in your React like JSX components for web. You're writing that, you're writing your HTML in that JSX component. So it's kind of up to you as the developer to write that properly. I have seen a lot of bad decisions where people are just throwing a bunch of divs in there, they're not leveraging semantic HTML. And you, Dave, you mentioned accessibility, and that's a big thing. Like, that's a big pet peeve of mine is like, I always make the joke of, I hate seeing div class equals button. And I'm like, wait, like, why not just use a button? We have that in HTML, use it properly. So I think a lot is still on the engineer developer building that component, is that they need to still use proper semantic HTML.
So it's abstracted to a point. I mean, if you're writing your own HTML still, it's not like you've abstracted it to the point where, I don't know, if you're using a button element, you know what I mean? It's not like you've written an abstract button element and this compiler knows, I'm going to change that into a button for HTML. I'm going to change that into an Objective-C thingy for that. You had to still write both those things separately.
Yeah, you have to change the view logic a little bit differently between React Native and Web React. Is that you are writing DOM elements for web, and then you are writing view logic for iOS and Android.
So it's partially abstracted, but not all the way. And then for styling, like that's a whole. I realize this is a whole can of worms, but
careful.
It's a big debate.
Well, it's a big debate just on the web.
Yeah.
Like, let alone if you're talking about adding styling that's abstracted to the point where it works both for a native target or a TV target and the web. Like, where do you store Netflix Red? Have that available as a variable to use everywhere?
Yeah, we use Less for doing most of our styling on, at least on our side of the platform. the debate you're talking about where it's people are saying, oh, I want to do inline styles, which React has the ability to put the styles and the component and the JavaScript and all the HTML you need in one file, as in like a really pure component, which is, that's one camp. And the other camp is, no, you should split it out into a separate file and then load it as needed. And then there's the third camp, which is, well, let's just put all CSS where the CSS normally goes, and we'll just load it in tangent with all of our React components. And those are kind of the top three kind of camps on how the style in React. And honestly, it depends on your use case. I think there's pros and cons to all of them.
It is too simplistic to boil it down to, I manage my styles in JavaScript, or I don't. Because there's multiple subcamps of this, including ones that you write your styles in JavaScript and it produces CSS that you then load in a more traditional way, but it wasn't handwritten by you in CSS.
Yeah, I'm actually a fan of that. I love the beauty of a component that's a component that's a component. So I give you my button component and it has everything you need. All there has the styles, have the JavaScript, it has any HTML that's going to be spit out. I think that's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to write code. But there are definitely people that are like, no, React should just be the React part and not the styles, and styles should live separately. And again, we could go down this road all day and it'll end up in a tabs versus spaces debate.
But it's funny. It's like a component may not mean anything without being a part of an ecosystem or something, like a component that truly has truly separated from anything. I don't know, I'm being philosophical too, maybe meaningless. Whereas it's kind of like what's hard for, I think, sometimes like CSS developers to wrap their heads around is like, why would I, does that mean that I have to redeclare every, you know, like why can't some of the styling stuff just be part of the world? Like I said, I set a font family and it just sprinkles throughout my whole app, you know?
No, that's all right. And I think that's actually like a good point. I think to the other argument is we could have two completely different websites, but using all the same React components, and someone could go write a style sheet that applies to both of them that look, or sorry, that two separate style sheets that apply to each of them can look completely different. And so I kind of see that as an argument too, is that you should be able to style it completely different and separate that. I've always been on the camp of like not putting CSS in the components, but I'm also with Jem in the fact that like having a component that can do and live on its own is great. I remember when I first started looking at React, like the very first time I saw it, it screamed like the wrong thing to do with JSX, of putting in your event handlers, everything just all together, your markup, all in this like one little component. It felt really weird. But once you start writing it, you're like, oh no, this feels great. So I know that if we started doing that more in our CSS, or putting our CSS in there, I feel like it probably would feel good. I think just at first glance, it doesn't feel right.
It also makes it really makes it easier to share the components across different projects, right? So if you're able to pull a component from, say, a component library and know that it'll always look the same across different projects, there's something to be said for that.
There must be, I mean, I have some ignorance here because I just haven't worked in a code base that's tremendously like this, but there must be some way to handle style, even while doing this, some style abstraction that makes sense, you know? Because just like a manager might waltz in the room and say, we're switching to Svelte or something, a design manager might walk in and saying, we're switching from Helvetica to Open Sans, and like our developers are smart enough to know that, oh, shoot, you know, I don't want to have to update Helvetica to Open Sans 973 times in a document. That's what abstraction is for. There is some way to handle that, I'm sure, right? That's already being done.
Absolutely. Like there's things that you could even create, like a top level component that controls that, and so that you're only sending it one place. Like definitely if you're adding your styles or like fonts, setting them in every single component, that would not be an ideal case. So there are ways to handle that even when you're just writing your React right. application from the start.
I just assumed that and hope people would got that. Like we're not literally talking about inline styles for every piece of, there is still abstraction at work here.
Absolutely.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com. It's error tracking software for your web app or your web app of any kind. Is it JavaScript, web app, any of the major frameworks of JavaScript, Ruby, PHP, even a WordPress site, Laravel, your iOS app, your PHP app, .NET, Rails, everything. You need to have error tracking software installed on your app. Your app is throwing errors of some kind. Are they big? Are they little? Do you know exactly what they are? Do you have no idea what they are? Are they screwing up your users? You just don't know unless you're tracking it. Install Rollbar in your app and get this dashboard of when the errors are happening, how much they're happening. Be alerted. Have charts. Assign them to your team members. Know what's going on with errors, you know, send them over to Slack if you want to, you know, and it kind of smart groups all your errors together, you know, make it, gamify it in a way, get to the point where you're, you know, you're working with your team to eliminate all of the errors that are happening in your app. It's just a great thing to have a dashboard for all of your errors and kind of like a not optional thing, if you ask me, in web development. So check out rollbar.com for all they have to offer. It's pretty sweet. What's going on, Dave? When's the last time you watched Netflix?
Well, so this is while I got y'all here. I got
nice. We always love hearing that, Dave.
Yeah, I figured, you know, you're here. I'm gonna take it. I got the Netflix. You know, I'm going to watch the Stranger Things, or most likely watch a show with my kids. Cannibals. Are you familiar with Cannibals? I'm probably your number one viewer. Check the stats. But I go to my, I pull up my Xbox. We're now in the TV. I click Netflix. It takes me 23 seconds to get to the, like, choose my profile screen. Is this React's fault? Is this just, like a native Xboxy sort of thing? Or like, I don't know, like what is this? I think React probably shares this kind of problem. Like, you have to do the rendering, the VDOM, and then you have to spit out the DOM, and then you get the render. Like, is this React's fault, or what do I tell my toddler? I guess is what I'm getting at.
So I haven't worked that much on TV UI side, so everything I say is just things that I've learned from talking to colleagues. But the TV UI especially, so that would be what Xbox falls under and things like that.
Xbox, Roku.
Yeah, all of those.
All your smart TVs, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, the embedded players, things like that in smart TVs. But what the TV UI team did, and they care about performance probably more so than any other team. We all care, but they care very, very, very much. So they've actually rewritten parts of React. So we say they use React, but they use a custom version that they've written and they've modified to speed up. And there's actually several talks some of the people have given, but they shaved, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 milliseconds off render times from personal observations that they've done. So in generally, it's probably not React. Here's a dirty secret about working on embedded things like Xbox or PlayStation, things like that. They're really, really, really slow. Manufacturers generally don't put a lot of weight behind the CPU and the RAM that a TV needs to actually load up something, which is why most apps take longer than they should. And it's so fascinating talking to, say, the team that builds Roku, because one of the targets they do for building an app and setting the performance benchmarks are a single core Roku stick with like 128 megs of RAM. Mm-hmm. And they say our app still needs to be performance. Yeah, and hopefully it's fast or reasonably fast. But that's the thing they set their benchmark against, because they say, well, if it's fast on this really, really slow device, then we can make it acceptable across a range of devices. But in general, no, slowness, I would not blame on React. I'd blame on TV manufacturers, things like that.
Well, I guess, yeah. Does that then, like, is that a problem for React, kind of a weakness? I mean, JavaScript, we all know, is super memory heavy, like demanding every ounce of memory. Is that a problem? Kind of, I imagine in the future, devices are only going to get cheaper. You know, Raspberry Pis are just going to go into everything, and it's just the kind of architecture is just going to get cheaper, thinner, lighter, but maybe a little more powerful, but like mostly just cheaper CPUs and everything. Is that like a I guess, is that a problem for this React Native world? Same with phones, too. I mean, you have terrible Android phones.
In general, React is pretty fast. What slows it down is probably people misusing it or abusing state or things that cause React to re-render every single time when it doesn't need to. Mm. In general, yeah, React is pretty quick. It's faster than Angular 1 was for rendering and listening to, let's say, 1,000 components on a web page just because of the optimization they've done with the virtual DOM diffing, things like that. And they've just released React Fiber, which is promising to be even faster.
Let's get into that in a second.
Yeah,
That's kind of interesting. But this, like, it's re-rendering things that it shouldn't, just as a, and maybe you all know more about this than I do, but CodePen Projects is built in React and Redux, and all of a sudden, one day, there was some, I don't know, there's like a Packer News article or something that was just like, oh, there's this new React thing that, like, it's a DevTools add-on kind of thing that tells you if kind of ridiculous re-rendering is happening in your app that you should be aware of. And so we're like, oh, that's good. We're trying to be really performance concerned here. So we like install it. And I don't remember exactly how this went down, but there's tons of it that we were doing. And we're like, yes, this is actually good because this means that, you know, we can identify a bunch of slowness in our app. And this was the moment that which for some reason it had to do with like comparison of lots of stuff. And it was the moment where we're like, oh, we can solve this with immutable JS, which is this whatever. It's a thing that if you use it, it adds some complexity, but ultimately it makes comparing objects like super fast. And so it like solved a lot of this re-rendering craziness for us. How much is that a part of your life and thinking? Is like, yeah, we're using React, but React doesn't automatically grant fastness. You still need to watch what you're doing inside of it.
Oh, absolutely. We're having to like pay. Those tools are great too. It's like you always want to check your performance and see how you can optimize in a single component, but also. We also worry about server side and like how are we rendering that? Like I mentioned earlier that we're rendering React on the server and using Node to do that. And there's things that we can optimize on that. And like we really care about performance. And we talked about some of the devices being like lower end devices. We also deal with worldwide countries is that there's various countries that the network bandwidth is not as great as some of the things that we experience in, you know, in Silicon Valley is that it's a lot slower. And so we're really concerned about performance and we're always trying to do a better job of making sure that that Netflix profile screen loads as quick as possible.
So just because this is all we cover tech news occasionally on this, and it was already mentioned, the React Fiber thing, and it's getting... For whatever reason, it's got the right name, or it's got something. It's got some buzz. I don't know how important it is or whatever, but I'm sure y'all know more than we do. Like, what is it? Why does it have buzz? What do people need to know about it? There's people already worried about it. Should they be worried about it? What's going on?
Well, I think it's not something that, you know, we've been following along, which is great. But basically, they rewrote their reconciliation algorithm, which I thought was like pretty impressive, is that they actually realized building React, like this is Facebook, as they were building React, found a lot of optimizations and decided to almost rewrite the entire algorithm from scratch, which is pretty impressive. And they're talking a lot that there's big improvements to the performance. Nofel, you might even know a little more into this than I do, but that's just like at a really high level. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah, I know that you'll be able to schedule your updates. So you'll be able to set priorities on some of the re-rendering of certain components. So say you want your animation to be very fluid. You can set that higher in the priority list. And then say you have, a counter that only needs to update one, like every second, you can have that be a bit lower on the re-rendering priority. And that way it'll make sure that your animations are fluid, knowing that it can delay that other component's re-rendering. Mm. At a high level, I remember hearing about that at a conference. I know that some of the concern is that some APIs might change. I think there's very few of them. But I know that when switching over to Fiber, it is worth looking into these different APIs. I forget which ones. I think set state might be one of them. I'm not quite sure which exactly.
But they're like, they're esoteric-ish. They're not like create component or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, they were pretty minimal from what I could see, that there weren't changing a lot. So if you're implementing React Fiber on, you know, changing from React to React Fiber, it shouldn't be a huge daunting task, which I think is really important as well.
I mean, I guess that's the overall message, is don't worry about it so much. It's internal mostly.
Exactly. And to me, you're even if it is a little bit of extra work, if you're getting a lot more performance gains on your animations, like layouts or gestures or anything that you're doing in your React app, it's probably worth like looking into.
Yeah, I think what it was the order in which some of the lifecycle methods get called does change based on your scheduling. So say you rely on component did update firing off before another life cycle, then those are the sorts of problems you may have or encounter if you update to Fiber. I should probably look into this more before we update.
No, it's it's kind of interesting though, right? To if because marketing is almost at play a little bit here. Like, well, okay, we have some changes we want to make, so let's name it. Let's tell everybody about all the perf improvements, and then we'll also tell them all some stuff might also change too. I mean, it's kind of smart because then it incentivizes the upgrade to it because of all the promises of greatness.
The way they built it is actually ingenious. And everybody out there listening who's like, oh, I use React, but I don't know about Fiber, don't worry about it. It's actually extremely complicated. It's taken a team 2 years to just build this reconciliation engine. So everybody out there trying to understand like difference between like trampoline scheduling and other types of scheduling, don't worry. It's hard. This is hard computer science stuff. But at its core, what they've built is with Fiber is
Piper.
You mean Piper Chat? They built Piper Chat, really. Distributed the internet for everybody. Oh, sorry, everybody who hasn't seen Silicon Valley yet, but you will. You'll catch up, I trust. But what they've built is the ability to do batch updates when the CPU is more in a more idle state than at other times, which actually I'm like making that sound really, really easy, but it's actually really brilliant. And I'm pretty impressed by what I've seen so far in Fiber and just the amount of thought and effort that went into, we just want to build a faster reconciliation engine rather than just doing intelligent DOM diffing. Let's actually have a way to schedule things in a priority queue. And that way, when the CPU is idle or the user's not interacting for those nanoseconds, let's update the DOM as quickly as we can. And then when the user's interacting, let's slow down unless it's a higher priority update. Like Nofel is saying, like animations or things like that, where you don't care if the user's moving their mouse or things like that. And I don't know, that level to be on to think in that way abstractly about how to make React faster is pretty forward thinking. And I'm excited to use it whenever it rolls out in a bit more stable form.
You're not like a beta release kind of company. You waiting for the point release over there?
Could you imagine if we accidentally screwed something up and you couldn't get your Netflix?
Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I can't even imagine. Is there like QA for days before you ship stuff?
Yeah, we do have really extensive QA. There's a lot of ownership on pretty much the entire, like every engineer working on their feature. There's a lot of ownership across the board to making sure that we're shipping, you know, really quality features out and not breaking someone's Netflix experience.
And we have thousands and thousands and thousands of automated tests that run before we release anything.
Yeah, highly test-driven joint.
I have a question. I guess, so Netflix uses React. Who else is, in your mind, kind of using React and using it well, and if people are interested in getting more downloads of React knowledge, like who is using React well and who should they kind of keep up with?
Probably Facebook makes sense. Yeah, I think they know a little bit about React.
There's some danger to that, isn't there? Because now people, they're well aware that React comes from Facebook. And now maybe there's some people listening to us that are like, Netflix is all over it, you know, that their decision-making is based on what huge companies are doing and maybe not what their blog needs.
Because I got that. I went to a conference last year and I was telling people I was a, you know, front-end developer, and they'd be like, so like React? And I was like, well, and then they're like, yeah, but React, because Facebook uses it. And I was like, I just kind of like fumbled, because I think even in this kind of, I don't know, manager, marketer,
actually, we have a question, Dave, don't we? Like, can we read that one from?
Oh, yeah. Here, we have a question. Very timely. It like came in yesterday from Abbas Arazu, and just talking about this whole thing. I've been listening to your show for a while now. Back in earlier episodes, conversations tended to be focused around what I feel are traditional front-end coding, HTML, CSS, and some JavaScript. Real quick, I take a little bit of offense being called traditional, like I'm some kind of basic developer, but whatever. All right. Nowadays, there tend to be a lot more discussion around React, Vue, Ember, Angular, and other JavaScript hotness. Would you say that the role of a front-end developer should now include the ability to use JS frameworks? And kind of goes on to like, I've been developing for 15 years, but like, is my imposter syndrome kicking in because I don't use this hotness or what? What are your thoughts? Is, I guess the core question there is like, should a front-end developer know how to use this?
I mean, I think it's the key point there. The imposter syndrome is so true to that statement too, is that you can't keep up to every framework. And I don't expect that every front-end developer out there is going to know every single JavaScript framework. I think there again, fundamentals of JavaScript, I think, is important. But it's also finding the right tool for the job. Like you were mentioning, like just because Facebook and Netflix are using React, should I use React for my like blog site or, you know, just a like simple site that I'm building? Well, maybe not. Maybe that's something that you want to do and leverage. But I think there's a lot of great tools out there. Even just building a static site is perfectly acceptable. I think using the right tool for the job is really the important thing. And that was how we evaluated leveraging React at Netflix. Is it the right tool? It wasn't just because, oh, this sounds really cool, Facebook's using it and Facebook built this, we should use it. It's a lot of discussions on trying to understand, how do we best assess what's going to do what's the right tool for the job that we're trying to achieve?
And I would imagine Netflix in particular with this React Native kind of sell. I mean, you guys are on Xbox, Roku, smart TVs, Android, Windows, all these platforms, web, you know, if you could get down to this holy grail setup of one code base that just spits out to all of them, that would kind of revolutionize how Netflix works.
Well, huh? Yeah. And I think there's some limitations there too. And I should like specify too, is that us exploring React Native, it's actually been our team that's building sign up and login for Netflix, is because we are a very cross-platform team. Our team is building those sign up flows on iOS, Android, website, TV, and we're having to support that. So we're talking about that is like, how can we maybe leverage something like React Native where we can maybe get a lot of these signup flows, build them almost right once. I know that's like a really big statement and never can you get right once. But it's like something that we're exploring around that. But there's limitations. Like what if, let's just talk to the mobile like native apps like iOS and Android. Like when we like our experience when you're playing, those are natively written. Like iOS is written Objective-C, Android is written in Java. Those are like supported by another set of UI engineers and teams that are building the UIs, and they're writing them natively, and they're able to take care, like really leverage the native features that are native to Objective-C and Java for iOS and Android. If we start leveraging React Native, we might be missing some of those features. There are some limitations. There could be performance issues. There's a lot of things that we really have to assess. So I think that whole like write once and ship to everything is a bit of a pipe dream. And I think you kind of have to really assess that. I don't know if that kind of answers the question or not, but I think it's important.
Right
to
tool for the job, but also, isn't there some right tool for the future? Like a guess at what where you might be going?
Absolutely, and like you can't predict that, like Apple or Google, like, you know, that's something they're supporting these native languages. Like Apple has Swift now, and so they're going to put power behind that. All of a sudden, they could say that React Native, they don't really want to support that, or they completely add a bunch of new features that React Native has to now catch up to adding those features in to support that. So it's really hard to predict what they're going to do down the line. But these are things that, yeah, I think, Chris, putting it that is like trying to future-proof your app is really important as well.
And conversely, like Windows supports HTML, CSS, and JavaScript like natively. It's like you can ship apps to the Windows 10 store with just JavaScript in it, like ideally a React app. You know, tomorrow or what, in June at WWDC or whatever, Apple could be like, hey, you can use Node on the client. And you'd be like, I'm sure a lot of people would just be like, holy F, that's amazing. Like, that's a bit of a game changer. But, you know, will it happen? Never. But
hey, it's possible. It is possible. So that would be exciting.
I just don't see it. I don't know.
If you're out there listening, at, you know, you're at your desk right now in, I don't know, normal Ohio, and you're thinking, what should I do for the future? Things on the web that aren't ever going to change, HTML, JavaScript, CSS. If you understand those basics, frameworks are going to come and go, technology is going to come and go, but if you understand the basics of these things and how the web works, that's the best way to future-proof yourself in the future, in my opinion.
I agree. That's a good way to put it.
Well, cool. I think that's a good place to kind of wrap this up. Thank y'all so much for coming on the show. You obviously, Netflix time is very valuable. It's too bad 11 from Stranger Things could not come on the show. She's just too busy. But really appreciate y'all coming on the show. Before we go, for people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? We'll start with Ryan.
You just can follow me on Twitter at Burgess D. Ryan. You can also check out our podcast at frontendhappyhour.com. You don't need to give us any money.
It's maybe a slightly boozier version of this show and heavier on the JavaScript. So I think you'll like it. I listened to a few episodes, so it's good. We'll go Jem.
I'm on Twitter at Jem Young. Pretty simple. I'm on GitHub at Young, which is awesome because GitHub lets you change your name. Love GitHub. Great people.
And Nofel.
Yeah, I'm Nofel on GitHub and Twitter. So that's spelled N-A-O-U-F-A-L.
All right. Well, thank y'all so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And send us your favorite Netflix show. How cute. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I just blasted through the 13 reasons one. It's great. Choptalkshow.com.